This is Lee Chambers
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Bit of a wolf in there at the end. Mark Cardle and Desire kind of disappeared for a long time. He had a couple of hits, didn't he? A couple of good years, I think, after winning the X Factor, then disappeared. But yes, he used to perform with a woolly hat on. I think those, well, are those days back? Those days certainly went when he had Simon Cowell as a manager. They might be back now. He's there under his own steam anyway. It's time to hear from Simon Mayer, writer and broadcaster, of course. Just written and had published his first novel for adults called Mad Blood Stirring. He's written books for young adults before, three novels. But so when I met him, when he came to Ely for an event organised by Topping's Bookshop, I asked him if, having written books for young adults, it was always inevitable, really, that he'd write a book for adults.
No, I don't think so. I've stumbled into everything. I haven't really planned it at all, and I just went where the story led me, really, which sounds a little bit corny, but when I found the story, the true story behind Mad Blood Stirring, I thought I knew I needed to write the story. I wasn't sure whether it was going to be a young adult book or a fully grown-up adult book, and it just became more adult as we went through. It just felt as though the adult characters were stronger, and it just felt that it led in an adult direction. But it's a very kind of artificial divide which has been constructed for bookshops and readers, you know, to help them out. But it's a story about two teenagers, if indeed teenagers really existed in 1814, 1815, because really you're either a boy or a man, or you're a girl or you're a woman. And these guys in my book had been killing each other for the last 2 years, and an extraordinary man in his late 20s. So I don't think it was inevitable, but it's just where the story took me.
And it's based on true events. How much of it is true?
Well, the spine, the guts of the story are true. That is that in 1814, Dartmoor Prison was built for the prisoners of the Napoleonic War, but in 1814 it filled up with Americans. We were fighting a war with America, another war with America, and it had 7,000 American sailors in, and 1,000 of them were black and 6,000 were white. At the request, this is all the true stuff, at the request of the white American sailors, the prisons were segregated. And this makes it Britain's only ever racially segregated prison. There's seven blocks in Dartmoor Prison, and the non-white block was block four, and that became run by one guy in particular. And this is, again, I just remind you, listen, this is all the true stuff. He was 6'7". He was the tallest, strongest prisoner in the whole of Dartmoor. He called himself King Dick. He went everywhere with a club in one hand and a bearskin hat on his head. He was a gangster. He ran all the gambling in the prison, but he was also a theatrical impresario. And, you know, again, this is all true. And in 1814, he put on a production of Othello, and he put on a production of Romeo and Juliet. And that was the point when I thought, OK, well, this is sufficiently extraordinary, I think, to merit an attempt at writing a novel. So my novel is a fictionalised account of the production of Romeo and Juliet in Dartmoor Prison in 1814. So I think that's quite ambitious.
So King Dick is real, because he is the sort of one of the axes of the book, one of the pivots of the book, really. And what makes him so charismatic as a character is, a lot of the time, the rhetoric that you put into his mouth, his words, his speeches. Where did they come from?
Well, it was a real act of concentration over a sustained period, because writing this book, I was obviously very aware that I'm a white Londoner, and I'm trying to put words into the mouth of an African-American in 1814. We know nothing about him until he arrived in Dartmoor, aged about 25, 26. So we don't know anything until this point. I think he's a naturally powerful man. I think he probably was a free man. So he has a natural sense of authority. He takes over Block 4 very, very quickly. So I tried to construct a way of speaking. He clearly loved Shakespeare. So he's a gangster and he loves Shakespeare. What's going on there? You know, this is a revolutionary age. The American and French revolutions are very vivid in everyone's imagination. They only happened a couple of decades ago. The Haitian Revolution as well would have been very to the forefront of his imagination, the only successful slave rebellion in history. So I made him quite a learned man, really, a revolutionary He talks about Hobbes and Rousseau, you know, because he loves Shakespeare. I mean, he's convinced that Shakespeare was black. He says that very forcefully. So trying to construct words for him was a challenge, but hopefully when people read about King Dick, he emerges as an extraordinary, true figure who has been sort of underreported, I think.
And you mentioned being a white Londoner, writing in the present day about black Americans from the 19th century. You're writing about racism and homosexuality. How difficult was it to write about those issues, putting yourself in the 19th century with a current-day sensibility?
Yeah, well, I kind of went where the story took me, and because Romeo and Juliet is so central to this story, the construction of the book is based around Romeo and Juliet. So Romeo and Juliet is told over five acts and takes place over 4.5 days. My book takes place over 4.5 months, but I've also written it in five acts. The race side of the story certainly came to the surface far more than I thought it was going to when I started. Charlottesville happened halfway through the writing of the book. And it's true that in the memoirs of the white sailors who survived and went home and wrote their stories and they became bestsellers, they don't talk about race tension, really, in their memoirs. But then that may well be because they were the whites, and it was the white sailors who had asked for the segregation. And I think the act of segregation, of putting the non-whites in Block 4, was an act of violence. And so I think if you'd had a conversation with the black sailors, they would come up with a very different interpretation of what it was like in prison 4. And also, the whole structure of Romeo and Juliet is two houses. There is no evidence for this, but if you were going to put on Romeo and Juliet in 1814 and you're in a black block and next door is a white block, I think you might think, okay, well, we'll be Capulets, you be Montague. I don't know, how do you want to run that? So it kind of lent itself naturally to the story. Whether it's got a modern sensibility, I think all the best historical fiction feels contemporary. I did an event last week with Robert Harris, who's the master of all this, of course, and when he writes about Cicero, you still feel as though he's writing about modern politics and spin doctors and so on. So I felt that it was a contemporary novel, even though it was set a couple of hundred years ago.
Now, how did it feel using words in the book that we wouldn't use now, that aren't very nice?
Yeah, I mean, I write about it in the author's note at the end about the language. I think I was led by... So Stephen King talks about honest dialogue. He wrote a book called On Writing, and he talks about how he writes and so on. And he talks about honest dialogue, that if people don't believe the way your characters speak, you might as well give up. I think I've written in a way in which sailors in 1813, 1814 would have spoken. You know, this is after the Revolutionary War, but it's before the American Civil War. The slave trade had been abolished in 1807 in this country, but obviously very much active and divisive and destructive in the United States of America. So I think my white sailors speak the way you would imagine that they would have spoken back then, and it's pretty shocking. I think I probably toned it down a little for the modern reader, but yes, I did feel as though I just needed to say, look, these words are offensive and powerful, but I think it's honest dialogue.
And you mentioned Romeo and Juliet there. It sounds like you got to know Romeo and Juliet pretty well.
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did. And what an extraordinary play it is. I mean, I don't know how much to assume. My guess is that most people know that Romeo and Juliet was one of the great love stories and that it ends badly. They're the only things that I've assumed. However, the more you know about Romeo and Juliet, the more you will notice throughout the book various characters represent other characters in Romeo and Juliet. So I've got a Tybalt and I've got a Mercutio and there's a Benvolio and there's a Romeo and Juliet in there, obviously. And some of the lines and dialogue from Romeo and Juliet find themselves into the book, because you can do that because it's free, because you don't have to pay Shakespeare copyright anymore. So it's sort of infused all the way through with Romeo and Juliet. Yeah.
A lot of celebrities now, or several celebrities, are writing novels. The public is sometimes a little sceptical about these novels. It's clearly you've written this, it's clearly your voice in there, but that must be quite frustrating.
Well, it happened more just when I started the first Itch book, which is a few years ago now, that there were general inquiries, you know, who did I write it with? But having written those three and then written Blame a few years ago, I think I've got over... I mean, I'm people may well be cynical, but trust me, most of us do it on our own, and this is entirely my own. Now, I think after the first book people realised that it was something that I wanted to do. And I went around schools for 2 years, you know, visiting two or three schools a week, talking about writing and telling stories. So it's very much part of what I do, I think, now.
That was Simon Mayer talking to me when he visited Ely recently for an event organised by Topping's Bookshop there. The book, his novel, his first novel for adults, really, Mad Blood Stirring. It's published by Doubleday UK. As I said, I've read it. I really enjoyed it. It's only out in paper, hardback at the moment. But, you know, if you want to treat yourself, oh, hardback book's lovely. Of course, you can get it on your Kindle. I would recommend it. Mad Blood Stirring by Simon Mayer, published by Doubleday UK.